All right, we're live. What's up, everybody? So today I went to a cat cafe. If you haven't been to a cat cafe, it's the sickest thing ever. It's a whole cafe that is dedicated to you hanging out with cats. They have so many cats, and they're all up for adoption, and you get to go, and you don't have to adopt them, but you can if you want to, but you just go, and they have, you know, matcha, they have coffee and drinks and stuff, and you just go sit with cats and pet them and hang out, and it's the best. I went because Galen was thinking about potentially getting a cat, and I love cats. I've had cats all my life growing up. But I don't want the responsibility of another creature, of another being. I don't want to, I'm having enough, I'm busy enough as it is with managing my own being at the moment. And I'm more power to you if you feel like you can manage more than one. And Galen felt that way. So I went along with her because I love cats and I want to sit and pet them. I just don't want to be responsible for keeping them alive. So we went and we got there. We were like one of the first people in. They rotate through every hour. A new group of people comes in. And so we were the second group of people. And we got in there and there were like three rooms. And immediately there's just so many cats running around. It's a feline paradise, and there are all these toys scattered around, and you can grab the toys and play with the cats or just pet them. And some of the cats are sleepy, some of the cats are running around. And so we went in, and what I noticed like immediately was the cats aren't really interested in hanging out with you, and not just me and Galen, but like pretty much anyone. Like a lot of the it feels like the cats are aware that these interactions are temporary. I mean, they must have some concept of like, okay, I had my, you know, fucking Charlie got taken away by a family that he seemed to really like, hopefully, and they seemed to like him a lot. Like, they must have some concept of adoption. I don't know where else they would think their friends are going, but I'm not sure, but it seemed like they were aware that this was a short-term thing. And you got to figure, you know, strangers coming in for an hour, they're going to try to get their cat pets. Like, these cats are in no shortage of attention or pets. So it just seemed like they were more interested in doing other things than interacting with people. And so we went around from cat to cat and we're kind of, you know, you put your hand up next to their nose and they kind of give it a sniff, see if they are interested in you. And even though they were down to get pet, they were also like, I'm going to like be asleep and kind of doing my own thing. And if your hand happens to be nearby, that's fine. But like, I don't really care. And I know that's cats. Cats are also very, you know, they're quite proud creatures. You know, they're like, you got to earn, you're just going to fucking pat me, dog. You got to earn it. You know, anyway, we were going around cat to cat. None of them were really interested, but there were some cute cats. And Galen immediately was like, that one's cute. That one's cute. Oh, they're all so cute. And I was like, yeah, they're all cute. You know, I'm not going to get one of them, but they are cute. So they had an indoor area with all these places that you can sit, and they had like a screen that was playing like a bug jumping around the screen like a fly. It was just displaying that, and some of the cats were just going nuts on that. And we were in that area for a little while, and then we went to the outside area, and they have like what's called a cat patio. And there's all these cats bouncing around out there and just kind of, you know, saying what's up. And then we heard like a and we turned and there was this cat that was missing an eye that was just absolutely batting this other cat, you know, just going off on this cat. And there are a couple of people there that work there, and one of them came over and sort of broke up the fight and just kind of went back to what was going on. And so we were hanging out with the outside cats, and then we went into we went back into the main room where we were before, and I sat down next to this cat that was at the screen playing with the bug on the screen. And I sort of started petting it, and it wasn't really responding to me. It was this really pretty, I don't know what it, maybe a Siamese, I'm not sure what the cat was, but it was cute. And I was just kind of petting it, and eventually it kind of like turned around and it looked at me, and I sort of put my hand up and it like started licking my fingers. And I was like, oh, hey, hello. You know, got some attention back here from this cat, and it was really nice. And I kind of put my face closer to it, and I found out it was a she, and she, her name was Giza. Like, what a weird name right off the bat. I was like, how could you know what the Giza? What the, you know, but it was like the pyramids of Giza, the Egyptian cats. I think that was the reference. So Giza put her face right up to my face, and we started having a little, you know, nose makeout session. And then she just like hopped like right onto my lap. So she hopped down from the little elevated surface onto this seated area that I was on. And she just went right into my lap and started just like burying herself in my legs. And it was like she was trying to get as nestled as possible. And she was just like so, she was just so stoked. And I was so stoked. It was like this instant cat connection that it felt really good. You know, my last cat, Chloe, died a number of years ago. I haven't had a good cat interaction in a long time. And it sounds like I'm talking about like my... See, right there, I was about to make a joke, and then I'm like, is that bad? But the universe knows that you're joking. That's part of this. Like, I've been really watching what I say, because I think that what we say massively directly impacts our reality. But this universe is intelligent. We are in it, and we believe we are intelligent. So if intelligence exists in the universe is intelligent. It must be. So I think that an intelligent universe understands humor. If we can understand humor, we are the universe. So the universe understands humor. So the universe knows that I'm joking if I say that me talking about my cat interaction is like a widowed dude. I don't know what you call a male widow. A widowed
is like when a
nice. What I was trying to say is that my discussions of my cat interactions sound like a widowed who had a dead wife many, many years ago, and this is his first date, his first connection on a first date since then. Which is basically what a cat cafe is. You're going on a bunch, it's like speed dating with a bunch of cats. And you're going around and you're just hoping that something sparks. And most of them are just uninterested because they've been on Hinge forever, which ironically is where Galen and I met. And but anyway, I decided to not say that for a second because I was like, oh shit, what if that manifests? What if that actually happens? Ah. So I think it's actually the worrying about the words that I have said or was going to say, that's what makes it manifest, because now you're focusing on it and tying emotion to it and bringing it into your reality through the vibration that you're feeling and putting out into the universe, and that the universe is feeling, because you are the universe and it's in you. What the universe is feeling right now is what you're feeling. So by worrying about it, that's what makes it manifest. But just making the joke and knowing that you don't mean it, the universe picks up on that. So you don't have to worry about that. You don't have to worry about anything. You don't have to. You always can, but you don't have to. But I think that the fixation on, like, imagine if I made that joke and then for the next however long I just spent worrying about how my wife is going to die now because I said this joke about cats, fucking widow, dude, all this stuff. It's the worrying, it's the fixation. Whatever it is that we fixate on becomes our reality, because we're feeling the feelings of whatever reality we're fixating on now internally, even if it's not happening. It's the feelings are happening internally, which means the universal experience in this moment is that reality. And so then it's just a matter of time before external reality catches up and matches the vibration. The point being, don't spend your time focusing on things that you're worried about. Spend your time focusing on things that make you feel good, and trust everything else to just work out. Trust that what you're experiencing, and because this is something that I've thought about before, but then it's like, of course the universe understands humor. It's a humorous universe. If nobody ever laughed, if jokes didn't exist, then we would need to be very careful. But then this wouldn't even make, you know. Anyway, so Giza, having this amazing interaction with this cat. And it's so cute. I mean, it's like it's burying itself into its new home. That's what it felt like. It was like, get me out of here. Take me home. And it was such a contrast compared to every other cat interaction I'd had up until that point. So me and this cat are just absolutely in love immediately. And Galen comes over and she's sitting next to us. And one of the ladies who's working there comes over. And this is the same lady from earlier. And she comes over and she's, because they want to get the cats adopted too. So they come over if they see cats, you know, making a connection. And they're like, oh, you know, what do you think? You want to take her home, you know? And I did. And they're like, you know, start asking you questions about if you're looking to adopt and things like that. So she started telling me about Giza, her name. She's 8 months old. And we were just talking. And she was saying how she's, you know, a really vibrant cat. She's got a lot of energy. And, you know, just she was just telling me all about this cat, you know, sort of doing like a sales pitch on the cat's behalf. You know, she's like a car salesman for the cat. She's a cat salesman, basically. And I was feeling really good about it. You know, the more this lady talked and the more this cat buried itself into my legs. Oh, by the way, it was just absolutely kneeing a full loaf of bread on my thighs. You know, when cats do that thing. It just felt great. And about, I don't know, probably 5 minutes into this conversation with this lady, this one-eyed cat sprints past her. The lady's facing us. And I see this cat just like, you know, cruising past her at what seemed to be the fastest this cat could travel. And this one-eyed cat does a full head face plant into the chair rest that we're sitting on. This, like, you know, solid wooden thing that Galen and I are sitting on. This cat face plants into it right next to Galen. Just as hard as it, just a thump. Just a big thump. Head to wood contact. And it just, like, is, like, so stunned for a second. Like, whoa, you know, whoa, Jesus Christ. And then it like sort of scampers off like in a very confused, dizzy space, and it runs off. And first of all, everyone in the whole room like turned and looked at this cat, and Galen and me were all both like, oh no, are you okay? And Giza just like shot up. Giza like jumped up like out of my lap and scampered up into this like lofty area. And I wasn't really thinking anything about it, but the lady who was talking to us was like, wow, that's crazy. You know, I don't remember this cat's name, fucking George. And she was like, oh, that's crazy. You know, George is, you know, he doesn't have an eye, but like, I've never seen him do that before. You know, like this is not like a normal thing for this cat. This cat does not just run full force and headbutt solid objects. It didn't mean to do this, presumably. But for whatever reason, it did. And it totally disrupted the flow of what was happening. And so Giza's gone at this point. And this lady talks to us for a little bit longer. And then I think she left to go check on Charlie. George. confusing the cats. I think she left to go. Oh. My neighbor's banging. I can tell because the water is shaking and so is the desk. This place is really an amazing apartment, but there is that con. But would hate to get in the way of sex. So go off, king and queen, or king also. Or maybe he's just, you know, going to town on himself. Either way, I hope you have an enjoyable orgasm. So, yeah, the lady leaves, and then Galen and I are sitting there, and I'm, like, feeling so good. I'm feeling really, really warm in, like, I don't know, man. It just felt like, wow, I just made a really big connection with this cat. And Galen knew it, too, and we were just kind of talking about it. And then we decided to go into the kitten room. That's the third room. And the kitten room is just full of all these little baby cats that they're extremely cute, but not really as interesting because they're not really, they're mostly just sleeping. So harder to form a connection with, you know, a sleeping being. But we eventually went back out and I tried to find Giza, and she was just sort of, you know, walking around, and I went up to her and squatted down and put my finger up, and she kind of sniffed it and then just sort of walked away. And I was like, what the fuck? What just happened? I thought we had something special. What? It's like getting ghosted, you know, to your face by the person that you were just on the date with. You see them in person and they come up and, like, you know, say hello and then walk away. And you're like, what the? I was about to adopt you. But she just walked away, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. Well, maybe she's just, you know, overwhelmed by the connection and needs a time to decompress. She walked off, and then Galen and I were interacting some more, a couple of other cats, you know. And then the lady said that the time limit was going to be up in 5 minutes, and they recommend you starting to detach emotionally. That's how they phrase it. And I understand why, because you can make a pretty intense connection pretty quickly. So I found Giza again, and I had a toy and, you know, kind of lured her back in with the toy, one of the little tail things that jumps around, and she was like jumping all over the place, and it was dope. But she seemed to be like a totally different cat than she was when she was sitting on my lap. And, another thing that the lady said after George head planted into the side of the wall, or seated thing, the lady said that he probably already forgot about it. Like, apparently these cats have a short-term memory, especially when they headbutt a solid things. So anyway, she said that, and then that made me think, did Giza already forget about me? Did she already forget about what we have? So I don't know if she did. I'm not sure. But during that last interaction with the toy, you know, she seemed so much more interested in the toy. And then she went and played with another person's toy. And I was like, Giza, you slut. I love you. And I was like, gah, apparently this meant nothing to you, Giza. I'll be on my way. So we left after that. And Galen and I were walking out. And this mom and these two little girls were coming up the stairs. And we passed them. And they were part of the next group that was going in. And we got back to the car. And we started talking about that interaction. And what it felt like was, it felt like that cat with one eye, like somehow it needed to headbutt that thing that Galen and I were sitting on, and it needed to disrupt that sequence that was going on with me and Giza for who knows what reason. Sometimes it feels like things happen that are so, like, ridiculous or like obvious. It's like too obvious to ignore. Like it to me, it felt like if that cat hadn't headbutted what we were sitting on, I think I would have adopted Giza. And because that cat did that, and there's no way this cat was like, I'm going to fucking, I know this cat was mean and it was swiping at other cats, but I don't think that it would headbutt itself, give itself a cat concussion to try to prevent the happiness of another cat. That would be some sinister shit. I think it was just running really fast and just lost its, you know, sense of direction, which was already, you know, skewed. But for whatever reason, it did that, and that totally broke this trance that I was in, and it felt like Giza was in too. And we just never, it never came back. You know, you would think after a connection like that, that it would, you would think, I really do sound like I'm talking like a dude who just got ghosted. But man, if this cat was, you know, you can't just fucking come over here and lay down in my lap and make me fall in love and then just not say hello to me the next time I put my fingers in your face, Giza. Just kidding. I love her. But it was just like, it felt so out of place. And the fact that the lady who works there, who that cat was one of their longest standing residents. George has been there a while. And so you would think that at some point this lady would have seen George run into something. But it seemed out of character, even for a cat who can't see very well. So that is already so unlikely. And for it to happen just in this exact moment where I was really starting to feel like I'm gonna get a cat. And the fact that I had no intention, I was actively like opposed to getting a cat walking in there, but this connection was so strong. And then the fact that the connection didn't reignite later, it just felt like a very clear sign and gentle nudge in a different direction that like, hey, you know, in the same way that George has its whole own reality, that for whatever, you know, it bumped into this thing because of who knows why, but all of our realities are intertwining and intermingling and it's all connected. And George altered my reality in a way that to me feels like obvious and intentional and like orchestrated. Like, I'm not meant to have a cat right now, but I was meant to feel those feelings, to open me up to the possibility of having a cat or whatever creature. And then maybe for, you know, Giza's whole reality, maybe she just needed to feel really safe to nestle for a bit. Maybe what was happening was Giza was getting primed emotionally to open up and feel comfortable and safe, or whatever it was that she was feeling, so that those two little girls who were coming up can adopt her. You know, who knows? Obviously, there are infinite possibilities of what was going on, but what that cat's headbutt felt like to me, and the timing of it, and what was going on in that moment, it was like the closest I had been to like really probably gonna get a cat and just have it be interrupted. And I think that one of the really amazing shifts that I've been experiencing recently, it feels so amazing to begin trusting these signs more. And like trusting that I'm not meant to adopt Giza. You know, it'd be one thing if it would be such a different experience to have left the cat cafe and think, oh my God, I should have gotten her. Should I go back in? Should I just pick her up and take her home? She's got short-term memory. Maybe she hit her head and just forgot. She'll remember me. She could never forget me. Blah, you know, any of these sort of thoughts that are resisting reality, thoughts that I've now created attachment to, future scenarios of me and Giza growing old together, whatever it is that make me resistant to what I'm experiencing in reality. Like, I had none of that. There was nothing in my mind that made me think that I should have gotten Giza, despite this really great connection. And it's because of the sequence of the cat headbutting the wall, the seat, the sit, the why am I having such a hard time describing? I don't know what it's like a bench. Tough word to come up with, bench. But it felt so clear to me, and I felt grateful for the experience that I had had without any attachment to it continuing. And grateful for the cat, for George. Thanks for doing the headbutt, buddy. Thank you, Giza, for opening up to me. Like, when we create attachment to any version of reality, we are assuming that that is the best case reality. And that cuts us off from the infinite possible realities that are available. And I think that the feeling of going with it, the feeling of not resisting reality, you know, it'd be one thing if Giza, like, if our connection just sparked right back up the moment we saw each other again, that would be different. But it was clear that she felt differently now. And I'm not going to try to force that feeling just because I'm still, I just really want to take you home for some reason out of nowhere. I'm not going to resist reality. And by not resisting reality, you open yourself up to the infinite. And you can just trust that whatever is happening is what's best for you, even if you don't know why yet, which is a common theme of this podcast. And it just, dude, the feeling, it was so freeing, the feeling to just like be happy for everyone involved, whoever it is that adopts Giza, for the cat, you know, hopefully George, I don't know, maybe he banged his brain into a way that made his eyesight better. I don't think that's how that works, but I hope it is. But these types, I think that this is always happening. I think that if it's ever happening, then it's always happening. And it happened there. And we were talking about it, and it was just like, God, how good it feels to just trust the universe to be working out in my favor and everyone's favor. And just to like not have to try to force anything to happen. I think this is part of what being in the flow is. It's easy. It's effortless. There's no attachment. You're just going with it without trying to hold on to any part of it. And when you're not trying to hold on, you're just grateful for what you have when it's here. And when it goes, that's great too. It felt so good. And now, you know, maybe I'll get a cat. But probably not for a while. And we were driving to another cat cafe after that because Galen wanted to see if she could find a cat somewhere else. And we got stuck in this huge traffic jam because there was a parade going on. And we were moving, you know, 0 feet for an extended period of time. And during that traffic jam, because of how I was feeling, we were feeling about this cat interaction, it was like, you know, it's also right now in that traffic jam. We're meant to be there right now. Even if there's somewhere that we need to get to, even if we're going to be late, we're going to miss the cat cafe appointment. Like, there's infinite reasons that you can come up with for why you need to be at a place or need to have a certain thing or do a certain thing. And there's also infinite reasons why you need to be right where you are. And oftentimes that you don't even see them. It's in the background. Sometimes it's in the foreground, like George bumping into the bench. But you don't need to know why to know that it's right. And that made this traffic jam so enjoyable. Because Galen and I were just talking about this shit. Like, we just had a long period of time to digest what had just happened and how exciting it is to feel this way. And it just, like, I was thinking about how many people in that traffic jam were probably like freaking out and fucking tensing physically, like, oh, I gotta get to I don't know what they would be getting to. It was a Sunday.
I gotta get home and watch Breaking Bad.
Whatever the thing is that you're rushing towards, you know, it's putting your attention on something else that is ruining reality. And the more you experience life outside of those resistant thoughts, the thoughts resistant to reality, the more you actually feel reality. You feel this moment far more intensely when you're not thinking about how it should be different. It's one thing to be manifesting and be thinking about, I mean, the thing is that we're manifesting all the time. This is what we were talking about earlier, like whatever it is that you're focusing on, that's what's being pulled into your reality. So it's the way that you focus on it though. So if you feel feelings of negativity when you're wanting to get home and watch Breaking Bad and you're stuck in traffic, what you're manifesting is more of that feeling. So if you focus on things that make you feel good, what you're manifesting, that's the universal experience right then. So there's going to be that, that's what your reality is. So focus on things that make you feel good. You could sit in traffic and think about how amazing it's going to be when you get home and watch Breaking Bad. But generally speaking, I know when I was working at IBM, when I would be late getting home and I'd be like fucking bugging out on the way back because I'm already calculating the amount of hours that I have left before I have to wake up tomorrow and do it all again. And I would be so mad at the subway drivers and the people on the subway and, you know, I wasn't in reality. I was resisting it. I was saying this should be different because I want to watch Walter White make meth. Spoiler alert, I guess. But the awareness of the feelings that you have and the associated thoughts is so essential for living a happy life. And my life quality has risen dramatically the more I just stop resisting reality. And I just put my attention on things that make me feel good, including like it's pouring rain out right now in LA. And I love that. And I couldn't go out to the beach today. And I loved that. And I love the beach too. But I love the sound of the rain. There's always something that you can find in reality that you can love and be grateful for. And so if what we want is millions of dollars or to watch Breaking Bad, the best way to get to that reality is by focusing on things that make you feel good. Otherwise, when you get to the reality, when you're watching Breaking Bad, you're going to be feeling the feelings of resistance that you've been holding on to the whole time, which make the experience that you're trying to get to unenjoyable. So anyway, it's just like this. It's just like a trust. It's a trust in something like bigger. But it's not bigger. It's bigger, but it's also you. Because you're the universe. You're the atoms. You're the molecules. So it's just trusting the energy, I suppose. I'm trusting Charlie to bang his head into the bench in the same way that I'm trusting myself to beat my heart. It's a trust in something that you don't understand, but you believe will take care of you. Always. It just, I don't know. It just feels good. And that's what I'm focusing on. It feels good. So, yeah, stuck in traffic, kept going. Eventually, we got to the Cat Cafe. And the second Cat Cafe was a little bit even more subdued. The cats were even sleepier. And I think that's because it was later in the day. They'd probably been through 3 or 4 rotations of humans. And they're like, I can't fucking keep this shit up emotionally, dude. I've been on... You know, I've been what I thought was so close to being adopted so many times. Maybe the cats don't even want to get adopted. I don't know. Like, if you're a cat and you're in a cat cafe, do you want to leave? I'm not sure. But they just seemed fatigued. I mean, their social cat batteries were just gassed. So almost all of them were asleep. So nothing really happened there. And Galen was cool with that, you know, because in the same way that, you know, I wasn't meant to get a cat, she wasn't meant to get a cat, at least today. And we can trust that there are cats that are more compatible with us, that are on the way. And when they show up, we'll know. But I think that, it's like that awareness of these signs makes it easier to follow them. It's hard to follow a sign that you're not aware of. Like, certainly a stop sign that you aren't aware of is hard to stop at accurately. And realistically, a younger version of myself would have not thought anything about that cat headbutting the bench and just been like, Giza, the feelings that I felt with you were so strong, and I can't imagine life without you now, even though I just met you 8 minutes ago, but you got to come home with me. I'll pay for your food. I'll pay for your rent. You never have to pay for anything ever again. I'll take care of you for the rest of my life. Just come home with me, Giza. And she's like, dude, I don't even remember you. I've been pet by like 8, 9. I've been pet by like 14 other people since I saw you. But thanks for the safety. Thanks for the nestling. You know, it's just like, it just feels better to go with it than resist it. So, yeah, that was cool. And then we got home back to Galen's place after that, and she was making mac and cheese for both of us. And I'm a bad cook. There's some things that I can make, like avocado toast and salmon. I can, not together, but just for breakfast and dinner. I can make those two things. I can make some things, but really basic things that require, you know, no real expertise. And so she put the water on and it started to boil, and she was doing laundry. And so I added the macaroni in once it was boiling. And then I put the lid on the macaroni, and then I went over to her and said hello while she's doing laundry. And then we heard like, a sizzling going on. And, she started walking back in there into the kitchen, and I followed her, and, the pot was just overflowing with boiling water, and it was going all over the stove and stuff. And Galen was like, you might be worse at this than I am. And she said it in this sort of snappy way that it just, the inflection caused me to have a thought that I saw. I watched this thought pop into my head, which was, well, maybe you should fucking tell me not to put the lid on. Some version of that. That it was an immediate deflection of blame or deflection of criticism away from my inability to cook. Because Galen also says that she's not good at cooking. It's just not her thing. We've both got a lot of other things that we're much better at, but cooking isn't one of them. And so she was saying that I might actually be worse than her at this. And my ego, in that moment, I watched the flare up, and I didn't say it. And I thought about it for like a couple of seconds. And then I kind of just like, I don't know, I just didn't react. And then I said, I'm not that good at cooking. I'm not that good about knowing things about cooking. Something like that. And just like immediately, the charge was gone. It was like I waved the white flag in a battle that hadn't even started. Like but at the same time, it was like right about to. Like, my ego was so ready to battle my girlfriend who I love and who loves me. It was like, fuck that shit. You are a master chef. You're the best boiler of macaroni and cheese that has ever existed. Fuck you. Enjoy your fucking boiled, overboiled macaroni and cheese. That's obviously an extreme case, but it's the ego pops up so immediately the moment there's any sort of criticism or attack, or if reality starts painting a picture of your image that is different than how your ego wants it to be. Like, the thing about this is I have no, like, I didn't think that I had any attachment to people thinking that I was a good cook. But in this moment, when Galen said that, it was like, it felt like my ego was just like, it didn't like being criticized. And it didn't feel like it mattered what it was being criticized about. And what was so wild about watching this happen and then not reacting the way that my ego would have reacted is it got me thinking about how if I'm doing this with something that I don't care about, or on the list of things that I care about people thinking that I'm good at, cooking is next to the bottom. If I'm doing this for something that's that low on the totem pole of priorities of people thinking that I'm good at whatever it is, holy shit. What else? How? I must be doing this in every moment. Like, surely there have been an immeasurable number of instances where I have reacted egoically to things that, and just basically ruined experiences for myself and the other people or person involved, or cat. Again, like, the ego is like, no matter what has been said, I will not be labeled as that. I will not. You can, and it's such a meaningless endeavor. Like, who am I trying? I'm trying to convince Galen that I'm actually a good cook. It wasn't even really about convincing her that I was a good cook. It was more like convincing her that you should have told me not to put the lid on the pan. It's a deflection of blame and guilt. This is your fault. It's not my fault. It's your fault this is happening. I can't do anything wrong. It feels like this, it can't do any wrong. And anybody who says that it's doing something wrong is wrong. It was just such an obvious potential waste of energy to turn that into something bigger than it needed to be. And it felt so good to not react to that, to just watch it and then consciously decide to not put energy into this. It was, again, a very freeing feeling, because with sequences like this, it's really, I feel like I'm understanding more the opportunities that I have to respond differently from how I have in the past. Like, just because I may have been egoic in the past about things doesn't mean I ever have to be again. And if I am, it's okay. If I become aware of it, then I can decide once again to stop. And it just, like, I got to just enjoy the mac and cheese, and there was no charge in anything. I just got to continue being in reality without trying to now battle with my girlfriend about meaningless bullshit. And it just, yeah, dude, it felt good. And then something happened later. This came up later because we were talking about ego, and I told her about what that experience had been like for me. And when I was telling her about it, she said that she felt bad when she said what she said about, you might be worse at this than I am. And we started talking about why she felt bad about it, because in her reality, her ego is the one that's saying, you might be worse. Because, again, it's the inflection. It's the meaning behind what you're saying. And I felt that she was saying it in a snippy, you know, kind of, you know, whatever, kind of way. Not like a loving, oh, wow, you're like a lot worse than this than I thought, you know? I mean, not that that's the best. There are ways to say it that don't have such a condescending tone. And that condescending tone, or, you know, critical tone, that's what caused my ego to flare up. And fortunately, I was aware of it. But when she was saying that, she said that she felt bad because what she had experienced in that moment was the sort of panic that associated with seeing a boiling, overflowing, boiling pot of water that's, the flames are shooting up and stuff. And she's thinking to herself, oh man, like the apartment's going to fucking burn down or whatever. You know, there's a lot of things that she's dealing with there that weren't going on in my head. And because of this additional emotional reaction and charge that she had, it happened to manifest in the way that she said the thing was more charged than it would have been if there wasn't this sort of primal danger element involved, which totally made sense. And I think that's why she felt bad, because she realized, oh man, that was a lot more snippy than I would have intended it to be upon reflection. But then what we were talking about is how it was perfect that she used that excess inflection, because it gave her the opportunity to feel how it feels to snap. And it gave me the opportunity to feel how it feels to not respond, to not react to a snap. Both ways feel bad. If you snap or react to snapping, it feels bad either way. And it feels good to not snap and not react to snapping. So you see the two paths, and how quickly, if you just get a snap and a snap back, you got a snap battle immediately. And that is such a frequent, common thing amongst people, not just couples, but like anyone. And it was just like exactly what we both needed to experience in that moment. And then we got to share our own experiences that helped the other one, you know, learn from each of our experiences. And now it's like, I don't know. This is kind of what I mean, though, about like it's always happening. It's always there for you if you want to be aware of it. These gifts, this never-ending stream of exactly what you need, exactly when you need it. That's what the universe feels like. The universe is a never-ending stream of exactly what you need, exactly when you need it. And it's just a matter of if you're aware of it or not. If you want to be, because you can perceive these things however you want, and maybe the way that you perceive them is exactly the way that you're supposed to. It's just recognizing that, like, it's not a flow that you have no influence on. In fact, you have lots of influence on it. In fact, you are it. You are the flow, and you're in the flow. But your awareness of it allows you to move, instead of just clinging, I'm resisting, you know? So it's like, it's an interesting thing, because you're realizing you have no control and total control. Like, I can't control Galen saying the snippy comment to me in the same way that I can't control anything that the external world will say to me. But I can always control my internal reaction and external reaction. I can always control my own operations in this reality in the same way that I can control what I focus on. And that's the influence on the flow. That's the influence on reality. I can control to focus on how I like the look of this penguin looking at this tree of beads. Or I could focus on how, you know, some embarrassing shit that I did in 10th grade. You can focus on whatever you want, and you can also react however you want. And the more awareness I have, the easier it is to not react, and the easier it is to respond how I want to respond. Respond in the way that makes me feel best and the people that I'm interacting with feel the best. Like, the ego is so, like, fuck you and everyone else that's not me. It's such a mean thing oftentimes. And not just mean to other people, but mean to yourself. Like, no one is as mean to us as we are. No one is as mean to ourselves as we are. This is like the saying that people talk about, like, if your brain was a person, your mind was a person, and you hung out with them for a day, you would never ever hang out with them again. Nobody talks to you the way that your brain talks to you. And I think that that's also just a product of focusing on things that are negative, like focusing on things that you don't like about yourself instead of focusing on the fact that you're a miracle beating your heart, breathing, doing all of these things that are pure magic. And yet, you know, I spent a significant portion of my life focusing on how my nose looks broken. I don't have to do that. And if somebody says that your nose looks broken to me, I don't have to say that, yeah, well, your parents don't love you. Or, you know, you're fucking fat or short or tall or skinny or whatever the thing that would be bad for them to think, you know. You don't have to respond. In fact, you make your own experience shittier by allowing external negativity to influence you. Instead of it, you create an internal negative experience by responding negatively to an external negative experience. Instead of taking an external negative experience, being aware of what's happening, and deciding to choose love for yourself and others, regardless of what the circumstances are. You never have to not choose love. You can always choose love and peace and happiness. And the more I become aware of my reactions and just reality, life in general, the better it feels to be in it. And the easier it is to trust that, like, oh yeah, things are perfect right now. And even if there are things that I want, places I want to be, things I want to achieve, the best way to make all of that happen is by appreciating what I have now, the experience that I'm currently having. Because it's not about, you don't get to the place where you want to go and then all of a sudden begin enjoying reality. Because if you've been not enjoying the journey, then when you get there, what you will get to is a destination that is filled with a focus on negativity. The entire journey to the destination was filled about how annoying it was or how frustrated or bad or shitty it was getting there. Instead of and thinking that once you get there, then you'll be okay. But you never get there because you never actually experience the reality that you think you're going to experience. You get the reality that was a result of everything that you were focusing on that was negative. So it's like, fuck, there's nothing more important than now. And it's just like it's all here for us. Always. Never a moment where it's not. And how lucky we are. Like, so, so deeply lucky to be able to, in any moment, turn our attention fully to now, knowing that this is necessarily why you do it, but it is the quickest way to achieve everything it is that you want. And manifestations aside, I don't think anything feels better than being here now. Because even when you're thinking about something in the future, you're experiencing it now. So just, I'm continuing to focus on things that make me feel good and interpreting reality in ways that make me feel like I can't make a mistake, that the universe is on my side, it, like we're a team working together, and that I can trust it and trust it to send a cat to bang its head into a bench when I need to not adopt another cat, and trust it to send a perfect cat when the time is right. It just, it's so fucking fun, dude. It's so fun. It's like being a it's like you're being like your own universal detective, like going through these experiences and deciphering it. And what does it mean? And does this, what am I supposed to get from this? And what makes me feel the best? And you, I, it feels like we just, feels like it's just all for fun and for love. And like, of course it is. Of course it's all for fun. It can also, it can be whatever you want it to be. So I guess it's not all for fun. It's also for every negativity. It's all for, it's for all of it. It's for whatever you want. Your reality can be whatever you want. Now and in the future and in the past, because you're creating the past now. I mean, this is like going back to that episode about the molestation and feeling like how I wouldn't change anything about that now. You know, that's changing my perceptions of the past, which is changing the past and changing the present and changing the future. It's deciding to view everything as perfect. And the more you develop that awareness of these signs, and then you develop the trust in the signs, the easier it becomes to feel good and to experience life, in my experience anyway. So yeah, it was cool. It was cool, man. I loved it. And yeah, I hope you're doing really well. And if you're not, I hope you're able to focus on some things that make you feel better. And if you are feeling good, then I hope you're able to keep focusing on things that make you feel good. And yeah, I'm grateful that our paths, our interweavings, are connected, and that we happen to be sharing this moment in our realities together. That's really fucking cool. And I'm grateful for you for it. And it feels good to be connected with you and to feel good about this. It's just fucking, feels good to feel good. And on that note, I will see you guys in the next one. Thanks for watching, listening. Peace.